Is it all for the male gaze, or is this a step forward for the representation of women? White is seen typically by equal sex. In any way, when this work idea of this panel was first proposed by Sophie, thank you very much, Sophie, we thought we were just complete of a relevant discussion. And Sarah volunteered to lead the discussion with some discussion points, which is very surprised to see how many people have come. So we're wondering if people would like to, instead of being sitting up like this, if we'd like to have a discussion about some of that people's input. If we could try and get some sort of circle going with the chairs.
You're all pointing the wrong way.
So let's see what we can do about that, and then we'll get stuff organised. Start trending face. As all anything associated with Gynecon normally is. This panel is brought to you by Gynecon, your friendly feminist gorilla con that's by himself not so gorilla as it used to be. When we started Gynecon 9 years ago now, it's our 10th anniversary next year, which we'll have big celebrations for, I'm sure. This is the sort of thing that was very hard to get on program items, on programs, and you'll see a lot of stuff has changed like that. There's a tip for writing science fiction today and things, which Sandra started 9 years ago in a corner, in a small corner of the room, daring to mention the word gay. So we will start, and Sarah is going to lead our discussion, but I'm going to be your pointy person if she wants me to, and make sure the chairs get organised. So Sarah Hoop, everybody.
Okay, well, we particularly want to focus on the new season of Doctor Who, the new season, and the Weavingverse as well. And we're talking about strong female characters. So what are we talking about when we're talking about strong female characters?
Female characters that aren't just like, save me.
So from Sarah Jane to Donna or something like that.
Old Sarah Jane used to be, save me. The new Sarah Jane, she's got some balls.
Sarah Jane had more balls than a lot of the other companions.
True.
They were there to scream for the doctor. She actually did stuff. She thought about stuff. She thought.
I find it hilarious in a feminist context we're talking about women with balls.
Well, also, we don't have a language, do we? Do we say women with clits? It doesn't mean that, does it? Women with vulvas? Women with ovaries. It doesn't have the same sort of ring, does it? So there isn't a language, really, to describe that. Sarah Tribby, I just wondered if we wanted to make some ground rules about boilers. Some of us may know what's upcoming in the new Doctor Who season and have been spoiled slightly for who, what, where, when, why and how. I think we should say it now and then, that no discussion of what's upcoming. If you don't know, of course, then you let me see to start next week.
Can someone who is only watching it on TV tell me where you're up to, just so I know
we've had everything
out.
So we've had the season of Donna on TV, haven't we?
Yes.
Okay. And Dollhouse, of course, hasn't shown in Australia yet, and I think Dollhouse is one that is fascinatingly problematic, but I think it's going to be really hard to discuss here for people who haven't seen Dollhouse. So a Joss Whedon program, which I think is dealing with these issues.
Yes, a
really good example. You might want to mention it briefly rather than we're basing out.
I want to mention the thing that inspired me to talk about the panel. Because I, the premise of Dollhouse is you've got the I've only watched the first two episodes. And they've been programmed, right? They volunteer for it, and they get programmed to fit into a fanciful tush. To do various jobs, and so they can be fighters, mercenaries, they can be, basically they have the memory and some personality of people who are very, very good at a particular expert job, and they have to plug that into the person, and they become that expert.
So one episode you might be
like a donor.
Yep, one episode you're a vet, the next episode you're a hooker.
It's played by, the main character is played by Lars Dietrich, a very pretty young woman. And she plays these various roles, and twice we see her,
in the first episode,
in the first episode, being basically sort of an escort kind of story, a man. And what I found interesting about it is you see her in three roles, as an escort for a man twice, and as a hostage negotiator, which is not a job that requires sex work. She's And in all three cases, she's kind of similar. She's outgoing and feisty and a little bit kind of tearing people off and so on and so forth, but at the same time vulnerable and dressed in very sexual, kind of revealing clothing. And I thought it's really interesting, these are two different roles, and they're all the same thing. And I thought, to me, it's almost like Joss Whedon's idea of what men want in the ideal woman that you can program and control is a sexy, feisty woman who will, you know, give as good as she can get and whatever, but it's not under your control. And it's still vulnerable and weak and wearing, happens to be wearing sexy clothing. These are men who are hiring the perfect woman who was created exactly for them. And I thought, so maybe when we have Buffy and River and Zoe and all these women that are sort of powerful role models and stuff, this is the either sexy woman rather than the woman who's like an actual character. It's sort of just like how much this is just really happens to find hot.
Which was the kind of question that I asked myself,
and it was like a little creepy. I think the second episode of Dollhouse, the guy who hires that as his perfect woman, is amazingly creepy, which I thought was kind of cool. So that sort of, maybe he's done it. So that I think the idea to a certain extent as well.
So you've got an idea about what Dollhouse is in the 8th episode has shown so far, I think, in the US, the 9th. This weekend, but again, people haven't seen it, so we don't want to spoil people because they'll slap me. And so I think something really beautifully brought out there the idea of the sexuality and the strength of this idea. Sarah, I just wondered, did you want to explain to people what agency is? Because we have that in the panel, and some people might not be used to the term agency.
Yes, I sure do. So we're talking about control over yourself and your circumstances, and power to do as you choose, which is actually really important in what we're talking about here, especially in things like the new Doctor Who. We're seeing women who are genuinely quite very strong, but then they all seem to have their destinies molded for them rather than self-choosing, and so that's really what we're talking about.
Buffy as well.
Yeah,
but power forced upon her. Sammy River is also has her power forced upon her.
Absolutely, and then people who are officially there, she can watch over them. And again, in Dollhouse, they have the whole sort of player-watcher dynamic, except with the operatives and men with guns who stand around and protect them and then tell them what to do and that sort of thing. So there seems to be very much intertwined with this lack of agency.
You're not really a threat to an viewer.
Mark, yeah. Do you want to say
I was wondering if this aspect in fiction and Tolkien shows that the female characters who combine as powerful also get something sexy clothes. Whereas, for example, I was watching the Brisbane series of 24 and a female person, and she's not very unflattering clothes on the person. And she's portrayed as bumbling and something really nice going on around her. But
is she really powerful then? Or is
she's not
yet another example of women not being a threat to men.
What, is she competent or incompetent?
She's patterned after Hillary Clinton. They wrote the script before Hillary
lost it. Yeah. So she's but is she shown as competent?
Being Obama.
She's
competent. The situation is basically guiding her.
Okay.
She responds to the event situation rather than directing.
So she's reacting rather than acting ahead. Okay. Lynn, what's your say?
Well, I know she's not a Who girl or a Whedon girl, but I was thinking of Caprica and Six in Battlestar Galactica, where you've got the different incarnations of Six, particularly as Caprica, where she's extremely stunning, extremely beautiful, but very capable, and directing Boltar. As well, she is one who guides him in what she perceives as God's plan, and so she's a very, very powerful.
And you see, character. Is there an intersection there between the sexiness and the strength idea that this woman who is strong also has to be sexy?
Well, when she's just slightly doubting her, when she's not quite capital with the slightly browner hair, she's still very strong and she's still directing nuclear weapons and that, but she still is able to guide a lot of things, even then.
She's definitely less sexy when she's
at the vulnerable moments that she's being attacked and when she's got the sitting out people and
being dealt with. But it's good that she still has power. Now, you've got the less sexy, and she can still do things, but the sexier one, she's using sex as a tool.
And you why is it the only tool?
But the thing is, she shows that it isn't the only tool, because she, I mean, for most part, sex is used as a controlling tool, but we don't get to see the contrast, and suddenly here we have her, that she still has the power, she's still strong, but not necessarily using sex directly as a tool.
And you see that sex with Volta, when you're in Caprica and Volta, when you're in the real Caprica and she's got projection Volta, that's still going on, that Volta becomes the mirror image, the male image, and their power play is very similar.
And again, people, as you all know, Battlestar Galactica has now finished. It's not really shown on TV in Australia anymore,
not
is it?
No.
Oh, all right, so...
It's legal.
Is there anyone who would be offended if you found out what happened at the end?
Battlestar Galactica was actually screening on Foxtel in Australia at the same time that it was screening in the States.
Okay. Two, you want to say something in
the
event?
I was just going to say, the problem with the analogy of Six Caprica is the fact that at any given point, you're still giving the implication that she might just be an apparition, which means she's still not a threat. Like, she may not exist.
At one point, she does pick him up and hit him.
At no point are you actually given any clear indication or absolute proof that she actually really exists.
Her ability to totally fuck with Volta.
Except for the bit where she...
I'm not talking about what could be described as his extremely elaborate fantasies that leave him smacked against walls. I'm talking about her emotional impact on him.
But then wouldn't it be that if she could think of his imagination... then she's a man. She's a powerful doubter. Is that how powerful she is?
The woman that plays Six is remarkably attractive woman and doesn't wear many clothes, but I don't think that the way she interacts necessarily is all about the sexy, because she spends so much time being powerful, angry, driven, ambitious. She's engaging. I mean, yes, she's startlingly beautiful at all times, but her interactions with Baltar and her interactions when she's embodied aren't necessarily about sexual relationships. They are about the fact that she's extremely passionately involved in the concept of love, and she has, I don't know, my personal response to her is that she has many dimensions.
Okay. Sorry, don't know your name, love. What's your name? Right. Joe, what do you say, please?
Just the idea of a guy being controlled by a woman, which is it's not about, and it's not why women have power, but I think you've got to be really careful saying, well, she's really powerful, she's powerful through a man, because she can exercise the sexual control over him.
And would you argue that perhaps it can be turned the other way? That it's a power... It's like this idea that what is conceived as a power that she could use, but also it becomes what's her only definition as well. It's a limiting idea as well.
Also, again, it comes back to
who's
telling
the
story.
Well,
it's the man telling the story, and that's how he's controlled by this woman, when actually it's not. It's his own thing and his response to her that controls him. It's not ultimately her controlling him. If he turned around and said, I'm not
going to
buy into that, she had no control
of it. Thank you, that's very interesting. Yes,
no. That sort of goes back to the idea of the harlot, where it's these men, they wouldn't be morally bankrupt and evil if it wasn't for these scarlet women tempting them, how they right back in there.
Yeah. And very much a religious notion as well.
It's a shame we don't have so much of the Madonna ideal. We're not talking Madonna who goes around in her 50s and...
But the Madonna virgin icon.
Yes,
anime has that, does it?
Yes,
Kathy, what were you going to tell us?
I was just talking about him. I think that Judi Dench version, because we're talking about these strong women, and what I found was really interesting about Anne, when she was cast, I thought, oh, wow, fantastic. And then it was really
interesting. Because age, there's an older woman, power, less sexualized, not
sex addicted. And the implication that she used to be an agent, and so she knows what Bond is doing, and the whole thing, things like that. But what's really interesting about the story arc, they've got Judi Dench suddenly. So instead of just being the shadowy figure that we see about the end of the movie, suddenly we've got this figure that's all through the movie and has a lot more characterisation and interaction. But look what happens. Bond has to rescue her.
But if she was a man, the song would still rescue her.
Yeah, but the male M.
Oh, she isn't.
But the male M never was kidnapped.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in some of the books he was.
We never saw it on the screen. It's such a stereotypical.
Okay, Peter?
I was just wondering, going on from the end, but
I'm back to
the
outside of Africa.
Does Laura Brosnan
account
as a strong...
Well, they're very interesting. Peter, what's your perspective, Peter? What do you
think? Predominantly, though, she's very much informed by the fact that she's struggling against cancer for the entire of the series.
But does that give her a strength, a moral strength?
It gives her a moral strength. She certainly doesn't use her sexual skill. She uses political skill as well. She's very primitive. In fact, you find her almost fascist in the way that she treats the silence at the beginning of the series.
Hmm. Yeah, I think she's a fascinating character because, again, like Em, she's an older woman. And so there's clearly, and of course we have to say this context, this is entertainment, movies being made that have an incredibly limited representation of what you'll allow on the screen anyway. I mean, I'm never going to be the sex symbol, except to you, of course. But you know, a very limited view of what women are going to be. So the women are all going to be attractive. The men are pretty much all going to be attractive. You know, you're allowed Dawn French. You're allowed Dawn French, but you're not allowed Kevin. You're allowed more men who are a bit tubby. But like, there seems to be allowed.
Because she's funny.
Because she's funny. And actually, I wanted to bring that up, but you wanted to speak, so then I'll mention something about Bobby.
Yeah. 2 points. First of all, the recent Bond movie is actually based on a real person. The director of MI5, she's only just retired about 10 years ago, but she was in control of right up to the end of the Cold War. I think it was a couple of decades that she was director of MI5. So, yeah, just say.
Oh,
it's and that was, she was trained in the days where women weren't meant to be field operatives, you know, they were expected to, you know, yeah, that. The other thing with Battlestar was, there's sort of different representations of female strength. Yes, you've got Six, who uses sex as a weapon, but you've also got the other two that I'd like to draw attention to, violence and politics. You've got the president, who uses politics, but also, and the name is just
Starbuck,
thank you, she's cool because she's very, very good at what she does.
Competent.
Very good. Yeah. She's not necessarily a good soldier, because she's incredibly insubordinate, which is probably the basis of much of her appeal, but... just if you look at the three of them, they're almost the representations of three dominant sorts of power: sex, politics, violence.
That's lovely. Yeah, that's really interesting. What a nice point there. That perhaps there is an attempt, perhaps, in Battlestar Galactica, whether you consider it successful or not, will be your reading, to show different types of power amongst those characters. And of course, you'll remember the controversy when they cast Starbuck as female. Yes.
Are they intentionally ignoring the only woman of colour to have
a role in the Battlestar? Well, tell us about it, because I've never...
Athena/Boomer?
Yes, talk about Athena.
Well, yeah.
Is she more problematic here? Being very careful not to spoil things
off about halfway through season 3. Okay, you can have the beginning of season 4.
Okay, that really limits me. Because
I know.
She really comes into her own around end of season 3.
But does she represent the mother? So she's the mother character.
Yes, that's of course she does, doesn't she? She does come to represent that mother character. So there we are, that's getting really hard. Afterwards we might want to break into smaller groups. No one
go off and mumble about this.
To discuss that a bit more. Roman and Mark, and then I want to come back to Dr. Who, but I will. Roman?
Sure. I'm going to suggest that the first character of Darcy,
Jessica Alba's character?
Yeah.
Max Quivera.
Who's powerful in an agent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Against some terrific odds, if you look at the season. But the other question I have is, are we setting the bar too low for science fiction fantasy? Because if you look at other TV shows, some of them have very strong, very capable characters. I mean, West Wing, for example. Why is it that
CJ and wasn't sexualized like that.
Why is it that the science and fantasy shows seem to be stuck into male fantasies of attractive violent women?
Actually, if I can just add to that, I recently had a really, really interesting post by someone who was talking about their deep, deep love for cheesy soap operas, and talking about how soap operas is actually one venue where a lot of the women are older, complicated, mean, interesting, have lovers, have lives, have extremely complicated, long, involving experiences, are not denied agency. And she was making the observation that that's an interesting
genre often as well.
I don't know. She was. I don't have to watch, unfortunately.
Anyway,
but I thought it was interesting that they brought it up, and that was a field where apparently she felt that there were much stronger representations of women who had agency.
Primarily female audience might make a difference there.
Yeah.
But
I'm talking first. Yeah. I was just thinking that there's three or four female pairings in Buffy interested. Buffy and Faith.
Mm-hmm. The opposition thing.
Willow and Donna. Buffy
Donna?
And
Donna?
Donna?
Sarah.
Sarah. And Buffy and Dawn. And they've all got different power relationships. So Dawn's got more moral authority than Buffy has. It's an interesting power dynamic between those two characters. But Buffy's the physically powerful slayer.
And Buffy can't fill that role and the mother role, can she? There's that thing there that one role cuts out the ability to look after the other role. So she goes after their mother dies, she fails to be the mother. I was just to mention The Who, because we've watched it, and someone brought up Judy Dench, and it reminded me of that. Of course, there was a lot of, when the character of Donna was brought on, and you've got to understand that in the UK, at least, Catherine Tate, the actress, already had a huge, gigantic public profile as a comedian who annoyed a lot of people, so who I might actually find very funny. So she had a big profile, and there was, oh, she's too old, and she's too fat. She's too stubby.
Too fat?
Too fat.
Oh, yeah. I've been talking about the fact that she's not old and fat.
Yes, too fat, too fat. Too old, too fat.
And then when Alex
and then sort of frumpy, and she often, they did dress her frumpily as well, I thought quite a lot. And the other one, and of course, Alex Kingston playing the character in the library series. What was her name? Professor
Song?
River Song. There was a lot of fanboys, but I don't know if they're really men or not, because of course we're talking online avatar type thing, but fanboy resentment of her that she was too old.
That representation of River Soul is post-relationship with Doctor.
But it doesn't matter. The logic didn't matter. The Doctor was
130
years old or whatever, but she was too old. So there we had competent, scientifically competent, and the program obviously, although of course that's pricing, we won't get into that complex, lacking HD in the end, but again, she lost out because she was too old to be sexy. Now, Sophie, your point at the written about is strength and you sexy.
Yes.
So you have someone like her who's shown to be very capable, very things. Do the age abnegate that?
My point is not that strength and you sexy. My point is that there was a very specific kind of sexy which marketed itself as strong.
Okay.
So it's not that all strength is sexy.
Mm-hmm.
We're told how strong she is, but she doesn't look physically threatening. She's too young to have had the life experience to have that. So she's basically powerless in a lot of traditional ways, physically unintimidating. You don't get muscular, like something that I like about Starbucks.
Yes.
She looks like someone who actually could punch her out. Well, Sarah Michelle Gellar doesn't.
She wasn't
learned
to punch at 17
as well,
but
she didn't
learn.
No,
I blame her fight choreographer for that.
That's unintimidating and
I think when you have women who are actually, I don't even know what to think about, I don't know what to think about those anime, is the archetype of the very young girl who has strength and power, who takes her weapon. And it's like she's like a victim of her own strength.
Is she prepubescent? Often?
Sometimes or borderline.
Right.
A very creepy show once.
Well, then that's where it comes into the dichotomy. Normally we talk about Madonna and whore dichotomy, yes. But Madonna and whore always comes right in the middle of a woman's sexual prime. But then you have another dichotomy. You've got the matriarch, which we've spoken a bit about, like, say, Battlestar Galactica, these big, strong women. Then we have the opposite of the matriarch, which is the child.
Yes, and I think...
A child which creates you as such. And to get the power just makes
sense. They cannot be a full-grown, powerful woman, because then they don't have that controllability.
And then it makes you wonder, it's just... Now they don't have their power because they're children, and we get a sense of that with River Tam, but then bringing in the power. But then we get the sense of the matriarch, as a woman who has the power, but she doesn't have to use her sexuality to get that power. Mm. And so when we're getting a lot of those, especially in the Doctor Who verse, we get a lot of the women who are taking on the child role, who seem very young. You get the Doctor as a father figure, yes. And then all these women as children, and they don't have power. And you think. But if they could, if only they would mature, but then to mature means to become sexually mature, and the only way to be able to get power is through their sexuality. And so you think, do they have to pass through that phase before they can get to the matriarch phase? And then matriarch mother means the fact that the
sexuality of the matriarch as well, that it's not just that the matriarch doesn't have to use her sexuality. The matriarch is no longer allowed to be sexual at all. It will often be quite aggressively unsexual. Like, you don't have many women who are kind of sexy. You have women who are like played in a very unsexy way. I mean, that's part of the judge, but I'm not attracted to women. I mean, I would like to think that they actually were. I was wrong. From where I can see a cue that you'll have a sexy woman and a non-sexy woman.
Yeah.
Very neat line.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've heard that that's the case in Hollywood, is if you're in,
oh yeah, right,
you don't get half.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird.
It's very hard. Kathy, and then, I don't know Elena.
That's right, I was just going to make the room comment.
Right, all right. Kathy, and then
Helen. I'm actually, wish I knew a little bit more about feminist history at this point, because I think we're actually touching on something.
I suppose
you are. I've had a conversation that has dropped out of conversation in the last 2 years or so, and that's this idea of the new woman that arose after the war. I don't know if you've heard of it, the new woman. It was when women first entered the workforce, and suddenly they were grown up.
Rosie the Riveter.
Yes, well, they were no longer children, but they weren't the matriarch, and they suddenly had this new power. And I think actually what we're talking about here, we're touching on some of those things that were seen as threatening about the new woman. But the language has fallen away and we no longer talk about the new woman. We all are the new woman. But it just it pinged for me when you were talking about that stuff.
And even as though you said, we said at the beginning that we're talking about new who, but the old who, you know, they were very much that new woman. They were scientists, they were teachers, they were, well, which is more traditional, but there were scientists, there were journalists, there were those competent women who were the new woman. Yeah.
We had the
warrior
who needed to control.
To control. Well, yeah. Like, we would call it the feminist backlash. Something that, in fact, you find young women today. Young women, you can tell me. But a lot of young women today find themselves very conflicted. It's the thing, like, I will not say I'm a feminist because to do so is dangerous for me. Because people have convinced me. It's bad for me to say it. Yes, tell us.
Just going to go back to Sophie's point about agency and life experience. Mm-hmm. I think, particularly in Buffy, Giles takes the easy way out there and he doesn't get to spend a lot of life experience because they're essentially high school characters, so they do come from a very uninformed background. But you see it even in characters like Rose and Donna in Doctor, particularly, where they very much play out the storyline of these bland suburban lives with no experience is going to live. Maybe Martha to a lesser extent, the Doctor, and she has had some interesting experiences in her life. But then, even in that stuff, I mean, I've learned
Jack is a woman.
Jack is a woman.
I don't think Jack is a woman. I'll just bring it up as an issue. I can play it
more,
but there are actually perhaps a lot of times giving this jump up from a separate education in the school sector rather than the legacy president as well.
Yes, quite right, wasn't it? She was sector of education, and oh my gosh, how did you get there? We had Jew, and then I think, who was it I also nodded at? over there, I've forgotten. Roman and then Liz. Yep.
I was going to comment with we were talking about with Lesbo that Martha didn't have any power in her storyline, or that she perhaps had more power. She didn't, because they really completely, what's a not swearing, screwed her over. in the way that they wrote the storyline, is that they wrote it only in the context of how she felt about the Doctor, and all of the brilliance in that first and second episode, or the first couple of episodes, completely fell away.
All her confidence, like, reading the manual, I always remember Emma saying that her favourite bit ever in Doctor Who was at that first episode where she read the manual to work out how to work the machine. And she thought, my God, finally! He's doing something sensible.
Well, and the other really, my favourite moment of Martha, and Martha is not the companion I like the most, on any given day, it's either Rose or Donna, depending on But what I did, my favourite moment of Martha was when she sort of sits the chair down in the alleyway and says, no, I'm not moving until you tell me. And she sort of really puts the Doctor in a position where he can't actually sort of make the decision on what information she's entitled to. It's like, no, I just went through this whole experience of hell for this, all of this stuff that you haven't even told me, and actually I'm not moving until you tell me.
Actually, that's what we left at the end with a John story as well, is they
strip her
of a life experience.
Yes. Yeah. But you have. Which they did, of course, because I think they showed it as tragedy, didn't they? Do you think they showed it as tragedy?
Yeah. But she was the only woman out of all the companions in the new Doctor who didn't want anything from them other than the life experience.
Yes. And yeah.
That was the way.
So,
yeah.
Now, the role of the Doctor, Donna.
I've always constructed Donna as actually being the Doctor being more companion to Donna than the companion to the Doctor, because she actually, many of the approaches to storyline, she's actually pushing.
Yeah.
She's the one who starts things off, doesn't she? Yeah.
Yeah.
And when the Doctor got her, I think it was heartbreaking. Yeah. And I think it was a sad ending for almost everybody. I mean, Rose ended up with the second-hand Doctor, was a big thing, you know. It's sad for everyone. And if you listen to Russell Davies, and I know many Whoians hate him or whatever, but if you listen to him, he says he thinks it's sad. He thinks what happens is it's bloody sad to everybody, but no one ends up really happy there.
Let us mention the dark horse of the universe.
K-9?
Now, here we have a very competent Welsh police lawyer, and she actually, I think, comes off quite well in the series.
Right up until she decides to have an affair for no apparent reason.
Sex is a good reason to have an affair.
She should have wanted to go up
and fight for it.
No,
have a regular role in a normal life to fight what would normally paint her as a bad guy.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
In her first episode, she refuses to be mine wife.
Yeah. So that's a guest of honour over there, Theresa Ann's over there. I'm sure you're thinking about Gwen Cooper there. What do you think?
Outstanding.
What don't you like about it?
Everything. Just her whole character. I don't know how to deal with it. She appears day one. I've not liked her. She's one. I just find her character weak.
Oh, well, emotionally weak, do you think? Or
emotionally, physically she's there, but emotionally, the character is just something missing.
They seem to try to do something with her that didn't come through and didn't actually establish itself or take hold. It's kind of like they started in the beginning, they didn't follow through, they tried to pick it up again. And the same as with when we were introduced to Toshiko, and it was like episode 6 or 7 before we actually got a taste of who she really was as a person, and she was incredible, but we'd already lost interest in her by that point. We'd already sort of dismissed her as a character that we were interested in.
And I think a lot of the writers talk and the producers talk about how badly the organisation of how they had to go about writing the first series buggered them up. You know, how they recognised their own flaws. I'm always so sympathetic to everyone, aren't I? How they recognised their own flaws with stuff. Like the thing about with Yanto's character, I'm going to kill you to Jack, you know, when his wonderful cyber girlfriend, she's an interesting figure, isn't she? Her cyber girlfriend, you know, and then they said, we completely got the ball, you know, 2 episodes later they were timing each other and talking to the window, I don't know. Yes, hello.
I was just
going to
say, and now I can't remember, Gwen Cooper, it was her assumption that she had a right to be there. That's what irritated me about her. She was, yes, a competent policewoman, but they keep telling her, these people who have experience, that you just don't have the training or the background to think you need to know these things.
Mm.
And she just blundering where she wasn't wanted or needed or...
And then screw it up.
Like, has everybody seen the end of season two?
We can assume if they haven't seen
when she finds Jonah and she goes in there and takes his mother and she completely screws up that whole situation.
Yeah, I don't know the writers for that episode because I think that should have gone better. But they twisted the whole situation to go... Like, I think that's the thing that could happen. I think it's going to turn it two ways. When I think it happens a lot in writing. Is where you have a woman who decides she's going to do something. And then she screws it up. Now you can either say, look at that woman, she screwed it up. Or if you get really annoyed with that plot line, you can go, oh look, the writers created a situation where the woman was going to, where you have a woman who has come to strong decision and she screws things up. And I personally, and every time I see that plot line, I've said it so many times, I don't blame the character anymore. I blame the writers for creating that situation because you so rarely see a situation where a woman decides, like, because you see, men have hunches, right? A male character goes, I have a hunch, this is wrong, I'm going to stand up against it and fight. The woman has a hunch, she says, I'm going to stand up against it, I know I'm right, I'm going to follow this through, she's going
to
get
me up.
And not to mention, the men assume that they have the right to be there, and lo and behold,
they
do.
They do!
So, like, it's not her fault, it's just that she lives in a world where women are wrong. And that's why she's wrong.
Yeah.
But I guess... that's a particularly netter way of watching the show. Yeah. You see how you might like actually watch what actually happened.
Karen, we're talking about TV series in general. Isn't everything the writer's fault?
One
character that I, my female character that I really love in Doctor Who is Jackie Tyler, because her motives are not because she wants to go and
see her mother. The mother in Doctor Who.
The mother role.
She's not being, but in the end, she's having sex because she ends up pregnant, you know. So there's she does manage to be both a matriarch and. She ends up being everything because she's out for her daughter, to make life better for her daughter, to look after her daughter. It's not about following the doctor.
Mm. Well, she has a life where she's dating and she's trying to find a companionship and enjoy company like the busroad that her friend.
And she's got a life outside the garage.
And she's doing what she wants for her own reasons and not feeling...
How do you find Donna's mother in that case?
Forgettable.
Martha's
mum I also thought was just a pale copy of or an attempt to cash in on the Jackie Tyler thing because she worked so well that they tried to do it again.
No, interesting, because I'm very sympathetic with you about Jackie Tyler and I that's how I see her, but again I read a lot of negative response that she was a shrewd.
I loved her for it because she was the mother tiger in a way. She was there to protect her daughter and she had to be a shrewd.
She's the Mrs. Bennet of the crime priest. In my eye, Mrs. Bennet's the hero of the novel. She's right the whole bloody time. This is just a big hero, damn girl's married, or what's going to happen to her?
Cool. Two things. Firstly, something you're missing, you're forgetting that for a fanboy, older women are incapable of having of sex.
Oh no, you mentioned that, but all women sex in their
How many years till menopause?
It's a well-known fact. I've seen it on television.
I was back you up there that I remember a reaction to in Farscape, the blue character.
Yeah,
I heard her once described as a dried-up old woman. Victoria Hay, one of Australia's top models of the 1970s. So, but that she was a dried-up old woman, and this idea that she was possibly menopausal. And having a sort of sexual, spiritual side, therefore, and being very powerful, incredibly powerful. But
she had orgasm.
Because,
isn't the basic
thing
that, yes, women can have some power as long as they don't overstep the lines,
yeah.
But
if they've both got the mother power and the sex or withhold sex power, then I'm sorry, that's too far.
Yes, and I think we found that, yes, that once you're the mother, you have to be desexualized.
Unless you're evil. You might be able to get away with
all your evil people.
Hang on,
you have to be caught if you are.
Yeah, yes, Mother Krishna. I don't know your name, Mother.
Tamara. Going back to the mother, the Rose, yeah, thing. Rose's mother, she got herself into situations where she was captured and whatnot. She got herself out of it. Martha's mother was incapable of doing that. She just kept on screaming and stuff.
Just as a mother thing there, how do we find Sarah Jane now that she's been put in the mother role?
My 15-year-old son is in love with her, and he was horrified to find out that she was older than me. Yes, I can talk about it.
I think she's had work.
He's totally in love with her, and he finds her totally hot, more so than any other woman in the movie.
And he notices the mother? Is she represented sexually or not because of the show bikinis as well?
Well, Doctor Who doesn't really come out with any sexuality. Rose is probably the only character that feel overtly sexual, but all the other...
Then when she tried to crack on the Jack. She's the only being in the universe who Jack doesn't want to have sex with. And if you'd like to enjoy it, you can go into little corners later. And I don't know if your TV in your room, but yesterday my TV gave you every time you changed channel, you changed briefly to the porn movie. Every single time. But I wasn't accessing the channel, just the free to wear, so, you know. It's
no, then you changed the channel a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, because I had a 3-year-old in the room going, just finishing up now, Sarah, and so you can welcome the closing remarks. And then
I'll share. Do we have time to throw out another question?
Oh, we've only got 5 minutes. We need to do the chairs.
Okay, right. Okay. Well, I think the main thing that we've covered here then is that it is okay to be strong or sexy, as long as there is some kind of control measure. So you can have power if you're older, but being older and non-sexual is that control thing. So if you can be strong in some way, but there needs to be that measure of control, and you don't have to be represented unless you're able, and as we were just saying, if you can be older and sexy and overtly sexual, then you are able because you have that
not being controlled by anything, therefore you're perceived as being evil.
The uncontrolled woman is
uncontrolled.
Yes. Yes.
I was just thinking of the character that sort of decides that. What about Beatrice Kiddo in the Kill Bill film? She's very powerful. She also is a mother and kind of sexualized. And how is she controlled? I was just trying to think.
Well, she wants control.
She's
the post-control now, isn't it? But she's not really had, like...
She only does one at any point in time.
And that one thing is because of a man. Like, it may be in order to control him, but it doesn't feel like she has... anything in her life apart from that one single...
Well, she doesn't anymore, does she? No. Okay, people, one last thing, and then we have to move the chair.
One character we really didn't cover that I was hoping we'd cover was Zoe from Firefly.
Well, people seem to continue on to talk about Zoe and stuff like that. May I suggest that the fan lounge area outside, where the chairs are in the foyer, might be a lovely place, the cocktail bar and the front area, to continue discussing. My woman, Miss Marple.
Yeah.
Not sexy, but tell you what, that woman is always right. She always follows her hunches and she always wins. Miss Marple?
Yes.
For the win. And Princess Minnie could always be kept.